You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Let's bring in Chris Sims, the popular Chris Sims, the much talked about Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host, former NFL quarterback. By the way, if you're going to put out a sizzle reel of all your great predictions, just let me know, because it's basically every appearance that you make on this show, okay?
Well, you're right. I mean, well, that's why you're the man. That's why we're best buddies. You know, you've always given me love and let me talk about these subjects, and it's not just one answer, and we move on. We get to deep dive into it, and that's why you're a legend in my book there, big guy.
All right, how did you prepare this list of your top quarterbacks? And I was curious about the list, because I don't think you go into detail of how many are going to be taken in the first round.
Right. Well, I think legitimately the one in my list, just so everybody is out there, and listen, if you want to hear my breakdown of everything, my Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast, I did an hour and a half podcast where I really got into the nitty gritty stuff, right? But I legitimately look at all the six guys: Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, Taylor Mond, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance as having elite traits and being first round type talents. Trey Lance is the guy I look at that could be the one who doesn't get into the first round, and not because of his talent, but it is still raw. He didn't play football last year. The year before that, it was, you know, a controlled environment where there's a lot of games he only throws the ball 15, 18 times. So I think that could scare people altogether. But I think legitimately my top five could all be first round picks.
What does Zach Wilson do better than Trevor Lawrence?
Zach Wilson, I'm blown away by Zach Wilson, Dan. You know, I look at it and look at and say, this is an Aaron Rodgers, a Patrick Mahomes, a Brett Favre-ish type guy. You know, one, he's a more consistent bullseye, dead-eye thrower. I mean, and I mean that with, you know, and I love Trevor Lawrence. He's worthy of the number one pick. I know I'm getting a lot of crap about that. I'm not trying to make this about, oh, he's not good. There's a lot to love about him. But Zach Wilson, it's just every ball is a perfect spiral on the money. All the plays that are there to be had for ease and completions, he really never misses. And then it's the plays when there's nothing there that he is really special and able to create and buy time and make unbelievable plays with his arm and his ability to deliver the ball in magician-like ways like a Mahomes or an Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I still go back to the Coastal Carolina game. I know it's only one game, but what I saw was somebody who got really frustrated, didn't hold his composure whatsoever, and really, Coastal Carolina's defense really got into his head. You know, you're not going against Alabama here.
I know.
And he let Coastal Carolina get into his head, and I always want to see what the quarterback does after he's thrown the interception, after you've been sacked.
Sure.
That was the one thing that stood out with Zach Wilson this past year. He's extremely talented, but that bothered me, Chris.
I hear you. He's got tremendous passion. I always watch the worst game. I mean, and I'll say is, damn, if that's his worst game, holy cow. There was some unreal throws where I just go, listen, there's not a lot of people on the planet that can do some of that. Now, they had a good defensive game plan. He wasn't totally on his A game. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, I don't mind the passion aspect of it and all of that. And then, you know, again, I don't know all of those things behind the scenes. I'm just trying to evaluate what I see on the football field. And even in that game, which was his worst game of the year, it still was really damn good. He made some throws that they had some drops in the game and all of that. And, you know, I understand it's Coastal Carolina and all that. It's not Alabama. But he also doesn't have Clemson and Alabama's offense and things to help him out the same way, too. We have to remember that. So, you know, the competition thing, I hear that a lot. You know, well, it's not the same competition. Well, I understand that. But Trevor Lawrence got to step on the field in every game in the ACC, and they were clearly the better team. It's not even close. So there is some benefits to having that as well. And, you know, throwing into tight coverages or throwing under pressure, you know, I don't really care what level that is. Oh, he's open by an inch. Man, the guy hits the target. Oh, it's a tight window. He hits the target, and he'll adjust according to, yes, the speed might be different in the NFL. Of course, it'll be greater and all those things. But, you know, Phil Simms, the Josh Allens, The Joe Flaccos, the Terry Bradshaws of the world, they came from schools like that and ended up doing okay. So I don't go too crazy with that aspect all the time.
What is Trevor Lawrence missing?
To me, it's just some refining for me. And again, I expect Trevor Lawrence to be the number one pick. I don't think he's better than Zach Wilson, but with Jacksonville, Urban Meyer, he runs a college-y type offense. I could see, you know, it's a great fit, let alone Trevor Lawrence in that region of the country. We know he's a big deal. He's a big deal altogether. But I think it's more of just the consistency of throwing that I looked at, Dan, that I didn't expect to see. You know, as I turned the film on, I knew I was going to see a lot of awesome plays and all of that, and I really like Trevor Lawrence again. But there were more missed throws and errant throws than I expected to see as I started to go through it. And, of course, hey, his team is really good, and, you know, they have a special way of calling a game where, yeah, you got to worry about a screen to ETN, and you got to worry about a screen to receiver, and then they fake that, and there's somebody open, wide open down the middle of the field. He's awesome prospect. Like I said, definitely worthy of the number one pick. I just think Zach Wilson's a ready-to-go NFL system superstar right now.
You weren't all in on Sam Darnold being the number one quarterback or, you know, even the second quarterback off the board. Here are the Jets at number two. Is this a no-brainer? Zach Wilson's right there for you. Is this a no-brainer in your opinion?
For Chris Sims, it is. I still believe in Sam Darnold and that he could be a successful NFL quarterback. You know, as I always say to Mike Floria, you know, when you're surrounded by crap, you know, you're going to get some crap on you every now and then and smell like crap. I mean, that's just the way it is. So it hasn't always been easy for him. I do think he'll fit that Mike LaFleur Shanahan system and be able to thrive in that. But I look at Zach Wilson and go, he is the perfect fit for that system. He can be Aaron Rodgers, what you're seeing to Matt LaFleur in Green Bay right now. Unbelievable feet, quick release, really powerful arm. Throws the ball on the run better than anybody in the draft. So he has all those things, and I just think, you know, if I'm the Jets, that would be the guy I would go with, yes.
By the way, I hear great things about Mike LaFleur. He's Matt LaFleur's brother, and I hear great things about him. And some even hold him in higher regard than his brother, who is the head coach of the Green Bay Packers.
Well, he's the real deal. There's no question. You know, my buddy Kyle Shanahan always speaks really highly of him. He's got a little different personality than his brother. You know, Matt up there is a little bit more, quiet and reserved maybe compared to Matt. But I expect the Jets I'm a Joe Douglas fan. Of course, I'm a Robert Saleh fan. And with Matt LaFleur doing the offense, if they play this offseason right, they're sitting in a pretty position to where if they can turn this team around, then I'd be excited to see what they can do over the next 2 years.
He's Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host, the former NFL quarterback. I had a scout say that it feels like the analysts are overthinking Justin Fields. Are we overthinking? Did you overthink Justin Fields?
I'll say this. I don't go into this with any preconceived notions. I'm a very casual college football watcher during the year. You know me, I'm all in on the NFL. I'm dissecting games and doing all that to where I'm not going to sit down all day Saturday and watch every game. Justin Fields, again, has some elite traits. First off, he's built like Cam Newton, except he's two inches shorter. His running is better than I expected. You can legitimately have a running attack behind Justin Fields. His arm is elite in as far as its power and his ability to make powerful throws, deep throws, and do all of that. But man, I think what scares me a little bit, Dan, is a lot of open spaces he's throwing to receivers. It's kind of a one-read guy, like, hey, this guy, ooh, he's not open. And then he looks to run. And sometimes if that first guy's not open, he can be a little careless with the ball, with what he does after it. And the thing that scared me more than anything was some of the games where his throwing kind of fell apart. It, like, really fell apart. Mm. There is some true mechanical issues that need to be worked on for him to be a complete NFL passer. Again, the final four in football this year, it's the four best passers in the game. I mean, it's Brady, it's Rodgers, it's Josh Allen, it's Mahomes. The game is still about that. And that's to where it, to Justin Fields, it's going to come into, and I don't get this benefit, knowing the guy at his pro day, can we see improvements on those things that, you know, we see issues with on tape and all of that? But there's just too many errant throws. And out of the group I talked about, he's the worst short ball thrower in the out of the group too. I mean, it's 50-50 on shallow crosses and throws to the backs out of the backfield and all of that. So those are the things that kind of concern me. Again, I think he's a first-round talent. There's a lot of elite there, but that's just where I think it needs some work.
Are you all in on Dak Prescott?
Yes. I mean, Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback. I'm not going to say he's top five, but I do believe he's a top 10 quarterback. And he has other intangibles that I think are special to leading a football team. So,
but if you were the GM,
yeah,
if you were right. Stephen Jones, what would you do with Dak Prescott right now?
I would sign him up. I would. Now, long-term? That's where I'm. Yeah.
Broken ankle, long-term, $40 million a year.
Yeah, I you know, that's where I don't worry about the ankle. I mean, that injury, yeah, I don't know if it'll be 100% to start the year, but, you know, my history and knowledge of that kind of injury is, in this day and age, 2021, he's going to be okay. And, you know, we saw how much they declined. He makes more plays than he gets credit for. You know, it's not as sexy as some of the other quarterbacks as far as when he moves in the pocket and makes a 20-yard throw down the middle of the field. It doesn't look as cool as Mahomes and Josh Allen and those guys. But still, the results are there. To me, the thing that I don't know and where I'm confused about it a little bit is just, you know, how much money is he asking for? I am one of those that's like, just because you're the next guy up on the contract doesn't mean you get to be the highest paid guy. And I love him. He's part of my Twitter page, the front thing there. I'm a big fan. But I also don't want to see him take a deal that, you know, crushes his team, and then he can't be successful that way either. And I think that's where the problem lays there.
Well, the problem is you got a lot of guys who are overpaid, didn't live up to their contracts in Dallas, and now he'll get all the blame. If you know, they aren't successful and they pay him that money, he's going to get blamed if Amari Cooper's not elite or that defense acts like it did this past year.
Right.
Would you trade for Russell Wilson if you're the Bears or the Saints, the Cowboys or the Raiders? Out of those four teams, who should?
I look at the Bears as being the team that needs to make a move. I mean, I can't get behind, like, we're going to go with Nick Foles as a starting quarterback. I can't get behind that. And, you know, even, of course, that doesn't look like they're going to bring back Mitchell Trubisky. But I think of all the teams where I just go, they need it to save their own jobs. Their defense is in a pretty good spot. Matt Nagy's never really had the quarterback he wants to run his system. Like, I could see them being the biggest players for Watson or Russell Wilson when all said and done. That's the team that jumps out to me. Now, you know, of course, what are they going to get back for that and all that? That's got to be worked out. But I just feel like Russell Wilson in Seattle is over. And, you know, it's over either next year or right now. And it's just, does Seattle have the guts to make the move right now and say the hell with it and let's go on and try to build, you know, for another year or two down the road?
If you're the Falcons GM, you got that number four pick. You got Matt Ryan. What do you do?
I'm going to ride Matt Ryan for a little bit longer. I am. You know, Matt Ryan, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's going to be, what, 35 or 36 this year? He's right there. I look at him and go, this day and age, with as long as the quarterbacks can play, they got a lot of issues and holes on their roster. I would go with Matt Ryan. Plus, I think he fits the system in which Arthur Smith is going to run and what we saw in Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill, that he can really make it work. So I would go with Matt Ryan for a few more years, and maybe 2-3 years from now, you start to think about drafting that next quarterback.
I think Matt Ryan turns 36 in the spring, Paulie.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep stirring it up, Chris.
Did you know me. I'm not here to stir it up. I'm not here to stir it up. I have aspirations to be pro personnel, work in the NFL one day, maybe 10 years down the road.
Has anybody reached out to you about being in a front office?
I've had dabbles. I've had little dabbles and just people like, are you interested in this in the next few years and doing that? So
did you send the sizzle reel, send your hype video from this show to this team?
Well, my first interview, it's going to be a part of that. Whenever I get to that, I'm going to, you know, I might bring you in with me so you can just be my hype man in the corner and we can work on that owner. But, you know, I'm not here to, this drives me crazy. People think I'm here to get clickbait and crap like that. I'm more into being right. I like to be right more than clickbait. I don't give a damn about social media. So I work at it, as you know. I'm not always right, but I've been a right a good amount of times too, and we'll see where this goes.
The Dan Etzer over there cheering.
We like it.
Like, yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. I don't give a damn about social media. Yeah.
It drives me crazy, social media. I haven't looked really in the last 24 hours. I haven't.
I'm guessing Clemson fans are probably not going to be too kind to you.
Oh, I have heard, from the people who helped me manage my social media, Clemson, Ohio State fans are pretty pissed off at me right now. Yes.
But you're huge in Utah.
Yeah, I bet you I am huge in Utah. You're right. Big time. I'm a star there all the way.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Dan. Be good, man.
That's Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host, the former NFL quarterback, and his quarterbacking rankings certainly got some attention, that's for sure. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
He's the popular Frank Caliendo, comedian, impersonator, impressionist, all-around good guy, and Arizona Cardinal diehard fan, and he joins us on the program. All right, what role did Frank Caliendo play in J.J. Watt coming to the Cardinals?
I'm a facilitator, Dan. I make things happen. I don't know. It's so funny how this stuff gets blown out of proportion. I'm basically, when Steve Keim needs something done, he comes to me. I'm the Ray Donovan of the NFL. That's what I am. I'm like his Yoda. He puts me on, he wears me like a backpack and runs around Dagobah. That's what's going on. I've known J.J. Watt for quite a while, actually. I've known him. I'm kind of friends with him, but I'm not like great friends with him to the point where I could ask favors of him or something like that. But a while back, Keim asked me, Steve said, "What?" Or actually, anytime
And Steve Keim is the GM of the Cardinals. Just let everybody know.
Yes.
Okay.
Anytime a free agent comes up or something like that, I'll text Steve Keim and go, "You want me to take care of this?" as a joke. And with J.J. Watt asked for his release, he got it. And I said to Steve, I go, do you want me to take care of this? And he's like, do it. I was like, okay. I thought he was joking. He's like, do you text him yet? I'm like, no, I haven't. He goes, do it. So I just text him. And it was really a soft sell because I have, you know, Packer fans are mad at me right now. And I knew this could be the thing. Packer fans mad because I grew up in Wisconsin. Cleveland Browns fans are upset. My wife's from Cleveland. And this is what I say to those fans. Your team didn't call me, so I couldn't help you. But it was good. I just texted him like, hey, Steve Keim won't leave me alone. I think it would be weird. People think I was like calling him as John Gruden.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, man. Yeah, people thought I was like, I do that to all my friends. Like, I'll tell you what, man. You think it's, I could see you waiting for it. Like, you want to go play for somebody that isn't me? What am I going to do with a John Gruden impression on that? They call him up as Adam Schefter. According to my sources, this is what it appears is going to happen. You are going to sign with the Arizona Cardinals Caliendo is going to have people incredibly mad. Jay Glazer,
you guys, I don't even understand what's going on here, guys. You guys know what it is. This is tough stuff. Listen, JJ, you come to Arizona. I got to just pop over there for my gym. You know, I'm working out with a lot of people. I'm training MMA stars. Listen, The Rock comes to me. When The Rock needs somebody, you see that show, the Kid Rock? You see that? I don't know if it's called Kid Rock. Young Rock? Kid Rock, he plays music, right? That's the guy. But Demi Lovato once knocked out my tooth. Anyways, so I'll get Caliendo spot. He can only do like 20-pound weights or something like that. But I can lift the entire. You ever use a universal machine? I spot that. That's a strong man.
So yeah, it was all plain and simple. But the people would just keep running with these crazy stories about. Well, you know how it is. A couple years ago, when Steve Keim came on with you, all of a sudden I changed the NFL draft, and it was me just calling him. And leaving him a message, or it wasn't even that. I texted him from my phone as John Gruden. I'll tell you what, I got a trade idea. Next thing you know, after I'm on your show, people are going crazy thinking it's some kind of I disrupted the draft. No. It was just simple.
I like the idea. Like, I don't want the truth. I like the idea that you did call and just started impersonating people. I mean, that you should go with that, Frank.
Well, that's why I'm lying a lot. I set this record straight at the end, but I lie up front. You know, I call Bruce. I like Bruce Arians. I was like, "Hey, Daddy, what are you doing, man? Do me a favor. Can you give me Tom Brady? I want Tom Brady. Give me a Crown Royal. Give me that. Give me Tom Brady. I tell you what, if we win a championship, here's what we're gonna do, Daddy. Well, I'll let them throw it on from boat to boat. And bring in Gronkowski. Call Belichick. Make that happen, Daddy. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. There's no Cliff Kingsbury impersonation, is there?
No, I don't. He's so tall and lean and smooth. I think it would be difficult for me to pull anything. It's easy for me to pull off an Andy Reid. I just do this, put a mustache on, and throw the hat on. That stuff's easier. But no, not really anything for Cliff Kingsbury.
When did you become a Cardinal fan?
Well, I live on the same street as the Cardinals facility. So, and I'm kind of wishy-washy. I grew up a Packer fan. I've still got the Packers part of my heart, but then, you know, become friends with John Gruden. I'm at an Aerosmith concert with John Gruden, you know, about 12 months ago right now. I got to help, you know, I got to root for them because they're always inviting me to
Wait. How do you end up at an Aerosmith concert with John Gruden?
Oh, you don't know about that? I was in Vegas, And I texted his right-hand guy, Jeff Leonardo, and because I'm scared of Gruden still. Gruden will text me at like 3 a.m, like, what are you doing, man? I'm like, becoming frightened, tinkling myself because you're texting me. He's just like, they went to a country concert the night before, and then I couldn't do that because I had to do something with my son and my brother-in-law, who was there for a convention at the time. And then he's like, we're going to Aerosmith tomorrow. So Gruden grabs his phone. He's like, I'm sitting here at the Aerosmith concert with my good friend, John Gruden. How's it going, Johnny? Which made me realize that in his head, Gruden thinks of himself as Johnny. That's who he does. I'll tell you what, I'm Johnny Lawrence. I'm opening up a Cobra Kai here, man.
Could you fool Mike Mayock if you called as John Gruden?
No, because they've done that. You know, Keim messed with him one time. Steve sent him a message. He's like, hey, Gruden called me. Is this real? And Mike Mayock's text back to him was, nice job, Caliendo. Nice job, yeah. So, yeah, people basically know it's me. But at the end, it's kind of funny because a lot of times the things Gruden will do, he tells everybody he loves him. Have you ever heard that or know that about him? Like at the end of phone calls, like, love you, man. And then he hangs up. It's like, what? It's just so awkward.
He's Frank Caliendo, the great comedian, joining us on the show. I was curious about this, to get into your craft. Is it more about facial than it is the
expressions?
Than it is the actual words you use?
Yeah, I think there's a combination of things. I think it starts with, for me, because there are people who do dead on voices. Some voices I do are like right on the money. Some are cartoons. If I can't do it right on the money, I go for more of the cartoon. Daryl Hammond, I think, is the best I've ever seen that can do that. Just mimicry right on and get the person exactly. I try to, and Dana Carvey would make them big cartoon characters, right? You'd see him doing, I think back to the heyday of Saturday Night Live. He's like, not gonna do it. George H.W. Bush never said that, right? That was something that he created. When I came up with the Madden thing, It was that. That's what made it go bigger, right? Will Sasso doing Kenny Rogers. I'm Kenny Rogers. Well, you make it bigger, and that's what makes it a lot of fun. So I think to create the character out of it, yeah, it becomes part of is the face. Part of it is the voice, and then it's what you say as well. One of the things that recently, which has a little bit of a face, is Romo and Nance, and they started doing me doing them. I don't know if you heard that, but the Tony Romo bit is, oh, Jim, this is incredible and amazing, and it's amazing and incredible. And right before something's about to happen, Romo goes, here we go, Jim. And it's like he's got this huge smile. Like you can see him. Oh, Jim, this is really, really great. I can't wait to see what's about to happen here. Here we go, Jim. And then I couldn't do much Nance. So all I could say was one word. It was Tony, because he goes, here we go, Jim. And but when you do Jim Nance, when Jim Nance gets excited, it's like you're somebody's playing with the audio dial. And it's like, it's to the sideline. So I would go, here we go, Jim. So it was, the bit was, here we go, Jim. Tony. Oh, Jim, it was really, really great. So they did it twice during the season. I was like, are you kidding me? And Nance would screw it up. So Romo would go, here we go, Jim. And then Nance would go, here we go, Jim. No, 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 Tony. So
they're imitating you, imitating them.
Yeah, yeah. It must have been the crew must do it all the time. And I started doing it to viral videos. You know, somebody would fall off a cliff. Remember Johnny Manziel jumping off like cliff diving? And Johnny Manziel, we haven't seen him. He's going to be in this new league, but what's going on right now? We're not sure what's going to happen. And he's going to jump. Here we go, Jim. Tony Splash.
What have you been working on the last year?
People don't know this, but I was instrumental in creating the vaccine for COVID.
Congratulations. No, what have you been working on with your show? Like any new people?
There's always new stuff. I've been doing a lot of Avengers things, you know, just the Robert Downey Jr. Do me a favor. Enjoy me. Okay. For Loki, my brother. I am Loki of Asgard and I'm burdened with glorious purpose. You know, just throwing stuff like that around. The BA, I did a charity event with Bruce Arians a couple weeks ago. It's so funny because I had the hat, the glasses. I could go grab it right now. I was actually going to do it. I should have done that. But it's amazing how quickly I can turn into BA by just holding my breath as long as I can. That's what I'm talking about, Daddy. I know I'm off the screen right now, and you're on it. I know what you're doing.
Frank just got out of his chair to go get his Bruce Arians hat and sunglasses or glasses.
It's prop. I'm a prop. Prop. I've been hanging out with Carrot Top a lot. That's what I'm talking about, Daddy. That's what we're talking about, Daddy. We're doing it. Was that Stretch Armstrong in front of you there, Danny? Come on, man. You do everything you got to gas from the office. Make it happen. Win or lose, we booze, baby. That's what we make it. Make it happen. That's what the game plan was. So people said, how you get Tom Brady? I don't know. You tell me how to get Tom Brady. I tell you, I'll smoke or something. That ain't what happened, Dad. Daddy, cry or bleed, we weed. Come on, man.
I always think that it's interesting when you're around somebody who does impressions, impersonations, that we feel like you can do everybody. You know, because I've said it before, you know, there's certain things I might not be easy to do. You might get like the delivery that I may have or the pauses I may have. Like Jim Rome, you do a good Jim Rome, but Jim Rome gives you those opportunities to go. Those are bite-sized portions that I can sort of take and I can make that mine.
Yeah, and Rome, you start to feel like is a character, right? He's a big guy doing great things. And you, Dan Patrick, fight to be the regular guy. You're normal. So, yeah, I think that's, you know, when you listen to Stephen A. Smith, it's the, you know, the veracity of what's going on here. I understand. Everybody who ramps it up and gets to that bigger stuff, that makes it a lot easier. So, you know, and analysts are always easy, too, because what do? They break down people in sports. So you just do that in real life. If you're doing Shaq and Shaq and Charles Barkley. That's what I thought. What do you think, Shaq?
It's pretty good.
I agree with the first half of what you said, Shaq, but the second half, when you started going to esoteric lyricism, I'm not really sure that that applies here.
I did, a
few months ago, I did Shaq with Shaq, and he came up with a new character, and it's not a political thing at all, but it was Shaq Trump. And he's like, that's luxurious. That's tremendous. So Shaq's doing the Trump.
Very, very good.
And he's like, I was like, that's my new character, Shaq Trump. He's like,
you have my permission.
Because we can all do impersonations, or at least we think we can, but it's the content that you apply to the impersonation that really separates you from everybody else, in my opinion.
Yeah, at times, you know, sometimes it just depends on what it is. And when I run out of jokes, I just go from voice to voice and talk to myself. It's the greatest gimmick of all time, right? It's just like I could create a conversation. That's what it does. It just talks about being different people. I'll tell you what, man, you go from voice to voice at least. Oh, Jimmy's doing it right now. Here we go, Jim. Tony. Oh. Are you ever going to be able to watch
No. But how is your wife, though, when you're working on your material? Does that, like,
she's never laughed a day in her life at me.
But around the kitchen table, are you annoying?
Has nothing to do with the voices, but yes, 100%. we've been married for 16-17 years. I'm truly annoying to her. I think I was annoying from the beginning. It's just, she still says, she came to see me at a comedy club. It was the improv in Cleveland, and she didn't laugh at anything I did. And it was like she was covering her mouth because she thought I was so terrible, and she wanted her $12 back. And now we live in a really nice house and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, that's the best investment you've ever made. You did pretty well.
Yeah.
With that $12. So, yeah.
Leave us with Romo and Nance, and congratulations on getting JJ Watt. So
listen, and if your team needs something, let me know.
It's too late for that, Frank. Too late for that. All right, give me one more Romo and Nance before we say goodbye.
Oh, Jim, it's been an incredible interview. He did a couple of voices, and right at the beginning, Dan really expected it, that that's what it was going to be all about. Didn't turn out to be that way, but we made it to something else, and that's Dan Patrick being Dan Patrick. Oh, going to commercial, lead us into it. Here we go, Jim.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, and you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. New head coach of the Detroit Lions, 22 years of NFL experience, 11 years as a coach, 11 years as a player. Dan Campbell set to join us. By the way, let me remind people, since the trade is not official with Matthew Stafford going to the Rams, Jared Goff going to the Lions, we cannot refer to Jared Goff by name. This has got to be a hypothetical. Coach, do I have that right so you don't get in trouble? I'd hate for you to get fined.
That would be correct. That okay. would be correct. Let me say this. First of all, I appreciate you having me on. I've always thought you've done a hell of a job, but I love the – you got one of those voices, man. And it's pretty special, man. I enjoy your show and what you do, and appreciate you having me on.
If you'd like for me to record your outgoing message – on your phone, I'd be happy to do that.
You know what? I'll think about that. Okay. I will. Right. I actually like that a lot. That would be pretty good.
All right. Let's go around the room. What we think Coach Campbell can bench one rep. Todd, I'll start with you. What do you think? Coach, I think, was like 6'5", 265 when he was playing. He might still be that by the looks of him. Fritzy, one rep, Coach Campbell.
375.
375. McLovin?
405.
405. Seton O'Connor?
I'm going to go 350.
All right. Paulie?
Oh, man. I'm going to go 4 Bills even, 1 rep.
I'm going to go 325. Coach, closest to the hole.
Yeah, I can guarantee I can do 225 once. I promise you that.
What's the most What's the most you've done?
Ever in my life?
Yeah.
For 1 rep?
Yeah.
I would say 425.
Nice. Nice. That's all I wanted to talk to you about, Coach. Thanks for coming on, and we wish you
well. I enjoyed it. That was great. Cool, these softballs. That's great.
Yep. Let's do the hypothetical game. What do you want your quarterback? What traits are you looking for in your quarterback? If you happen to get a new one instead of Matthew Stafford, what traits would you be looking for?
What traits would we be looking for? What traits would we be looking for? Yeah, I would say that you'd love the guy to be blonde. You'd love the guy to have a 1 and a 6 on his jersey. You'd love for look, man, you're looking for a guy who is a winner. You're looking for a guy who is he's competitive. He's got a quiet confidence about him. He's durable. I had kind of said this yesterday on talking to somebody else, but just somebody that you know when he's in the huddle and the other 10 guys are looking at him, that they really believe in this guy. Like you can look at him and know that he's got a sense of urgency about him. He does have confidence about him, and he can kind of calm the storm and just kind of keep everybody right in line and let them know that, man, listen, this guy will do his job if I do my job. And I think that's kind of the guy we're looking for.
Are the Lions set at the quarterbacking position?
It's a good question. It's a good question. I would say all options are open would be the best way to say that. I think that we feel pretty good with where we're going right now, but yet we're open to everything right now.
When did you watch your initial press conference with the Lions? Like, did you watch it after the fact?
No, I didn't. Now, I had friends that were sending me bits and pieces of it, but I have not watched the entirety of it, no.
What did you think of your performance?
It was fine. I mean, I wear my heart on my sleeve a little bit. It's just kind of who I am, and it's hard for me to be something that I'm not, and so that was – I just felt like I wanted to do something for the city of Detroit, our fans, and I wanted our players. That was kind of my first introduction to our players, if you will. And so I just kind of felt like that's who I needed to talk to. And then once I get going a little bit, man, it just kind of it goes, you know, it goes from there. And for everybody that thinks that I don't know that biting kneecaps is not a personal foul in the NFL, believe me, I know that. So I totally get that.
I loved it. You were passionate, but you were violent in that press conference. Did you hear from mom did you hear from anybody sort of outside that football bubble that went, man, what, who are you?
No, well, no, I would say because the people that I heard from are all people that know me.
Okay.
And they know exactly who I am. So to them, I think it was right in line with what they knew I was. And, that's just kind of me, and that's kind of how I talk, and look, you can't take everything literally, but yet I just want there to be this, I do want us to have a toughness about us. The league now has changed in such a way for the better, but also maybe not always for the better, and yet there's still this element of, man, you got to be tough. You got to be a tough player. It's a tough man's game. And, you know, you get bumps and bruises. You don't always feel good. And so to me, it's, you know, one of the edges that I think you can still have is even in today's game is how do you teach your players to, A, overcome adversity, but then to understand that, listen, man, your days of being 100%, you feel 100%, those are gone. When you walk in the door, you're 100% as a rookie. And after that, you're done. So this whole thought of, man, I got to feel perfect. No, you forget about it, man. Not if you want to be able to produce and to have a nice long career in this league. It just doesn't exist. The guys who can say, you know what, I can beat your ass at 85% of what I really am. Those are the guys you're looking for.
But look, as fans, we want physicality, but the NFL doesn't want more physicality. Knowing who you are, how do you teach what you want to teach, but understand under the guidelines of the NFL, Coach?
Yeah, sure. And that's the key, isn't it? I mean, that is the key. That's kind of the point I'm making. Is like, how do we get this advantage back of this aggressive, tough team, knowing where the league has gone and the standards that have been set? And there again, I don't have a problem with the standards, man. I get it. Like, look, there's ways to be aggressive and knock the crap out of somebody without it leading with your head. man, there's different ways to do this thing. You know, there's so much information that's come out and so much more that we know about the game than even when I played. And so we're not going to be out there and be a bunch of renegades that are going to be, you know, spearing people and we're getting kicked out of the game. That's not what we're going to be about. But I want us to have some type of edge here of toughness. And it doesn't just mean this physical toughness. I'm talking about mental toughness, man, to where these guys understand that adversity is just a word. That's all it is. And the minute you choose that that's all it is a word, man, you get through it so much faster. You go over it, you go under it, you go through it, but you get out on the other side unscathed.
I can't imagine your first pep talk with that first game. Like, you're going to be out of your skin. Right? Like, are you going to be breaking stuff and banging stuff? And
no, look, it depends on what's around. But no.
Have you done that before? Do you break stuff?
No, I'm not a break guy. I broke one thing before, but I don't break things all the time. That's not who I am. I don't run around hitting stuff and bring baseball bats, and that's not me. I'm a passionate guy. That's all. And I feel like I owe it to people. I owe it to my players. I owe it to my coaches. I owe it to anybody that's around me for them to know exactly who I am. And I feel like the only way to do that is, for the most part, you speak from your heart. And look, I'm going to state the obvious. It gets me in trouble sometimes. It just does. But I'm sorry. It's hard for me to act like something that I'm not, or say something that's written down on a piece of paper all the time. That's just hard for me to do. And, you know, I'd rather just speak what's on my mind.
You think you could take Vrabel in the octagon?
That's a great question, man. Listen, Vrabel and I, we played against each other. He was a hell of a player, man. And he's one of those guys. He's a man. And so if you're asking me right now, hell no. I couldn't do shit right now. So excuse my language. But, but listen, Vrabel's a stud, man. I got a lot of respect for Vrabel.
I don't know what that is behind you. It looks like when you put x-rays up there, like the light that shines on that. What?
Yeah. That's bothering you?
Well, no, I didn't know if that's what that's for. Like, you could put x-rays up there and look at them.
Yeah, every once in a while, just to see how my body's doing. I'll just got this x-ray machine back here and I'll put it up and see what it looks like.
But what's the most pain you ever played in?
I don't know. Well, I tell you what, you know what, as funny as this is, look, I guess I ended up having, in my time as an NFL player, I think I had, 13 surgeries just from, you know, now a lot of those were clean up, but some of them were in IR injuries. So I had some, I guess what you call major injuries. But after all of those being said, I'll tell you the one that hurt the worst was actually, I was at Dallas. We're playing Detroit. I caught a ball. I turned up and, man, I got hit right in the freaking thigh. And he put his helmet right in the middle of my thigh. And I got a thigh bruise and a Charlie horse. And it was one of those, I hit the ground and I remember I just wanted to throw up, you know. And I got up, I got back, and I didn't come out. I kept going. And luckily we were winning pretty good. And so about, call it, you know, 8 minutes later, I they pulled the starters out of the game. But my gosh, that thing, it hurt. I thought every time I was going to run after that, I was going to throw up because it hurt. That was one of the worst ones, as crazy as that is. And that's really not a big injury at all. It's nothing. But man, it was painful. And as a matter of fact, you would be shocked how bad I got messed with that. So I had the normal thigh pads, right? But after I got the Charlie horse, I'm not kidding you. This thing was like, my thigh pad looked like this.
That big?
Like, it was huge. So I started wearing these ginormous thigh pads. Everybody would, my teammates would just mess with me all the time. Like, look at Campbell's thigh pads. Oh my God, man. And they look like notebooks.
So
the minute one of our teammates got a freaking thigh bruise in a game, I'd be the first one over there. Like, yeah, look at this. Huh? That's what I'm talking about.
How was Parcells to you?
Parcells was great, man. I got the utmost respect for Parcells. I love Parcells to death, and here's why. Because I always respected him, you know. And I can tell you right now, there was plenty of times where I just had it with him, and you just want to let him have it because you can't stand the guy anymore. But man, he told you exactly where you stood, and he was a master motivator. He knew exactly how to push your buttons and get the most out of it, but he also was 100% fair with you. He told you what was going on. If you wanted to know where you stood, go right to his office, and he'll tell you exactly where you stand. Now, you better be ready, because he's about to tell you the truth. You may hear something you don't want to hear, but he was, listen, he was great. And for as hard as Bill was, and he was a hard coach, man, but yet, God, he had a great personality, and he just knew how to communicate to everybody of all walks of life. And he had a sense of humor. You know, he did. I enjoyed my time with Bill, and I learned a lot of lessons under him.
How many touchdown receptions do you have? 11? Does that sound right?
Somewhere in there. I think just a tick over 10, I think, in my career.
Best one, your most memorable one.
Yeah, I know that one because that was 2005. I was at Dallas. We were playing Kansas City, and I've kind of told this story before. This was, you know, everybody who knows Bill, it was, you know, you basically allow your opponent to beat themselves. You don't beat yourself. You don't turn the ball over. You find a way to run the ball. You know, you get an efficient third downs because you're able to do some things on first, second down. You know, you get in these fourth downs, you punt it, you know, you pin them, play good defense, all those. And I remember he came in that week. This is when they had the number one offense in the league. They had Priest Holmes and those guys. And he said, listen, we're taking the cuffs off. He actually walked in. The first thing he said was defense. We had a real good defense too, by the way. He said, defense, you got your hands full. And he said, offense, you guys are going to have to score 35 to win this game. I mean, and that was so uncharacteristic of something that Bill would tell us, but long story short, we got in a shootout, and we were aggressive. Bill took the cuffs off, and Sean called a hell of a game. Sean Payton called a hell of a game, and, you know, and I can't tell you the exact score, but it was in the 30s, and basically end of the game, and, you know, for the win, we did a little pop pass, and it was on the goal line, and I just blocked the defensive end, slipped out, and, you know, Bledsoe put it on me, and we won the game, you know, but it was kind of one of those you remember. It was just kind of special. Because everything worked to a T as to what coach said it would. And, you know, and look, it was so easy for me. I mean, look, I rarely did I go out on routes. And so I'm always blocking. So all I got to do is just block one more time or act like I am and then slip out. Nobody's going to cover you. So it was the easiest thing ever, but it was pretty good.
Did you come up with the camo design for the Detroit Lions?
No, actually, this is what they had last year. This was, everything was what it was.
And your shirt, the shirt, same way, the camo.
Same way.
Yeah.
This was the gear that they had here last year. And so I like it though. Kind of feels like it matches me, fits me a little bit.
Yeah. I could see you in a duck bind or somebody, you know, something like that. Do you got a dip in right now?
No. Uh-uh.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Maybe.
I can check.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, okay, you're good. You look like you'd have a dip in.
Well, when you've done things for many years, sometimes it looks like you got it in. It's just, your lip has been pulled that way. So,
Coach, good luck. And good luck when that blonde quarterback comes your way. We're number 16 here officially in a few weeks.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Dan. That's Dan Campbell, Lions head coach.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.